You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. If you buy locally, give us an argument for why that's a better way of getting food than basically looking for the lowest price in your local supermarket. We're going to be talking about buy locally as it relates to big supermarket chains in a short while. Also, in the post-Cold War era, finding the bad guys. All right, maybe you've got Al-Qaeda, but if you're a spy thriller writer, what settings are you going to use? We talked with an author about using China and the Olympics as a setting for a spy thriller. What suggestions and plot lines do you have? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. Call it America's new frontier, Iraq. At the end of the year, the mandate that allows the U.S. officially by international law to occupy that country runs out. The UN mandate resolution empowers our mission and presence in Iraq, and negotiating a new one has been a focus for many, many months of the Bush administration and the Iraqi government, and those negotiations have been contentious. But the discussions actually determine what the U.S. is going to be doing long-term in Iraq, and those discussions are actually taking place outside of the presidential campaign, which has motivated us to have a continuing series of conversations with experts and people in the field to give us a sense of what the long-term U.S. presence in Iraq is going to look like. Joining us now is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, Michael O'Hanlon. Michael, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Lots of models for long-term U.S. military intervention and presence. Which one do you think most closely matches what may be the outcome of the Status of Forces Agreement and the mandate talks that are taking place now?
Well, I don't think those talks are going to decide the question you pose, and nor should they, because, of course, as you're well aware, the politics in Iraq are so fragile right now and so combustible that talking about a long-term U.S. presence is simply going to reinforce the arguments of those who think we invaded for their oil or to use their country as a springboard for broader Middle East adventures in the first place. And, of course, that's not a perception we can afford to reinforce. So whether Iraq needs our long-term help to deal with its neighbors or its insurgency or not, I think we're going to have to be pragmatic and step-by-step in this to avoid these kinds of very polarizing debates. I mean, there are a couple of models, and one of which is we get all the way out, basically, and the other of which is we keep anywhere from, let's say, 10,000 to 30,000 U.S. forces, partly to help defend against other countries, Iran in particular, partly to keep the ongoing training mission and to just sustain a tight alliance. But I think it's way too early to talk about a tight U.S.-Iraqi alliance, and it would be counterproductive to do so.
Well, Michael, it sounds like what you're arguing, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, and I'm sure you'll say it much more precisely than I can, but it sounds like you're arguing for a step back, a bit of a timeout. Maybe we do pull out all the way and then get invited back in when Iraq has a more stable political situation. I don't know if that's practical or not, but it sounds like that's what you're suggesting.
Well, I think it's going to take long enough to do what you just said, that we really don't need to worry too much about this debate right now, except to the extent the Iraqis demand that we do. And if they demand it, of course, we'll have to respond. But I think that it's going to take the entire two terms of the next president's time in office, if that president's reelected, to finish the process of downsizing from Iraq. I just wrote an article yesterday with Steve Biddle and Ken Pollack in the New York Times, and we suggested cutting our forces by half by 2011 will be already an accomplishment. I think there'll still be 30 to 50,000 U.S. forces in Iraq in 2012, 2013. It'll be a much smaller presence with far fewer casualties, but then that presence itself will then gradually diminish in what would be the second term of the next president. That's the way I see it, given Iraq's needs. And therefore, in a way, we don't have to face this question yet, and we probably shouldn't, because it's going to just incite so much reaction within Iraq itself.
So, Michael, then, in terms of the near future, what should the U.S. should be considering in looking at the SOFA agreement that's being negotiated now?
Well, I think the SOFA agreement is sort of a matter-of-fact, business-like sort of thing. I mean, these kinds of issues of what happens to American contractors or military personnel if they're accused of crimes and those sorts of things are faced in all countries where we have troops. And they're often quite, as you undoubtedly know, they're often quite delicate matters, even in those places with longstanding allies like South Korea or Japan or Italy, where we've had some big issues in recent years over crimes committed by American military personnel. These are big, big deals in and of themselves everywhere. And so I think just getting the details right on that is sort of hard enough without even raising these longer-term alliance issues or longer-term partnership issues.
Well, the thing that you argue yesterday in the paper, in the op-ed piece, or at least implicit from that argument, is that to even get to a point where maybe we have a lot of troops there, but that they're hanging around in a kind of symbolic capacity, say in Germany or in the DMZ between the two Koreas, to even get to that stage is going to take two terms, many, many years, and a lot of changes on the part of Iraq to accomplish.
That's right, although I think we can hope for big reductions, maybe a year slower, a year to two slower than Senator Obama has outlined. The reason why we argue 2009 is a bad year to cut a lot of U.S. forces in Iraq is because they're having big elections that year. They still have 4 million refugees and internally displaced. They've got to find a way to resettle. They still have these big issues over Kirkuk and over oil. They have a lot of things that could still disrupt the progress, and we just feel that the next year, year and a half is a period we should go very slowly in further reductions. We can probably cut some more, but you know, I think that the steep reductions of 1 to 2 brigades per month would be badly premature in 2009. But we can, I think, aspire to some fairly substantial reductions 2010, 2011, and get our forces down into the 50 to 75,000 range in that period.
But those realities, it seems, from your perspective, are certainly going to render, on some level, a bitter debate, a passionate debate about what to do with Iraq, somewhat moot in that our hands are tied, really, by the political realities. Michael O'Hanlon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Michael O'Hanlon is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, another in our series of conversations about America's new frontier, Iraq.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.